Okay, we are holding on Kuftis Zayin Amud Aleph, six lines from the top. The Mishnah said, Imam Alay Akalot Shulchah B'cholah. We had a case where one person, for example, has a barrel of wine, the other person has a barrel of honey. The barrel of honey is cracked, the honey is about to spill out. So the one with the wine pours out his wine and saves the honey. We said, Ein Leil Sareh, he's only entitled to the typical schar that such a person would receive for carrying honey like that, for labor or whatever. But if he specifically said, Akalot Shulchah, I will save yours, and you pay me the value of mine, then he has to give him the full value. So the question is, am I? Why should he have to give him the full value? The name alone, Meshata Anibach. Why can't the owner of the honey say, I was exaggerating to you? Meshata Anibach literally means, Meshata is, I guess, similar to the word Shoita. Like, I didn't sincerely mean to accept on myself. I was fooling you. Wait, me like Tanya, because after all, isn't this like something that we learn in a Braisa? Suppose that somebody is escaping from jail. There was a ferry in front of him that he needs to cross the river to get away. And he says to the ferryman, take a dinner and take me across. Now, a dinner is much more than you would usually pay for a ferry ride. So the din is that ferryman is only entitled to the regular amount of schar, which is much less than a dinner. Why? So you can say meshat danibach. We have, by the way, we have this concept in Yivam. Meshat danibach, like I was fooling you. Joking conditions like that. That's why I didn't want to use that translation. But basically, that's what it means. I'm exaggerating. Yeah. So we learned a similar concept in Yavamis a couple of years back. We learned a case over there where Yavam wants to demand a huge amount of money in order to do a chalitza, that you can tell him, fine, I'll give you that money, and afterwards say Meshata Anibach. So there's a similar concept. Why it works, by the way, there's two major approaches among the Rishonim. One way of looking at it is it's because the person is obligated to do it as a mitzvah. In that case, it's chalitza, it's a mitzvah. In this case, it's a mitzvah to save a fellow yid. Just like you have a mitzvah of hashavas aveda on somebody's possessions, you also have hashavas aveda of his own body. So he's obligated to do the mitzvah anyway. He's not entitled to charge an exorbitant amount for doing a mitzvah. That's one way. The other way of looking at it is, again, in both cases, is because it was an onus. Over here, the guy is in a desperate situation. He has to get away before they capture him. In that case, she needs the chalitza if she's ever going to get remarried. Therefore, again, you can't. The idea would be, even if it's not a b'mkay mitzvah per se, you can't take advantage of somebody's onus like that. Now, if they were to make a kinyan on it, that's different. Once you make a kinyan, you can't send a shot on you, but we're not talking about that over here. So. The answer is holo dummy el sefer. However, no, because we can compare the case of our Mishnah to the sefer of that Braisa. Namely, the Braisa continues being omelo teil dinner zebischor chavavireni. That if he says, take this dinner as your payment and take me across, noisimle schor misholim. In that case, then he does have to pay him the full amount, the full dinner. Now, so if you have to ask Mishnah Reisho, Mishnah Sefer, what's the logical reason? Just because he says bischor, why does that change the equation? Because we're talking about a here case, this ferryman does two things. He runs a ferry service, but he also is a fisherman. He also uses the opportunity to catch fish. Therefore, he has the ability to set v'schorei, means, in other words, that for the compensating for the fact that during this time you could have been catching fish, instead just take me across without stopping to catch fish because I'm in a hurry.
Then
you have to pay him the full dinner because he lost that amount. Now, so what happens if he wasn't going to be catching? What happens if he do? Can we say maybe he wouldn't have caught fish anyway? So there is another machlokus among the mechorishim on that.
On that specific trip.
On that, yeah. One way of looking at it, let's say he wouldn't have caught fish at all. Rather, let's say we can figure out, fine, but the amount of fish he would have caught is still a lot less than a dinner. So fine, let's say, for example, the normal fee for, let's put it in dollars rather than dinarim and prutas and whatever, which we're not familiar with anyway. So yeah, he tells him, you know, here's I'm offering you $100 to take me across. The usual amount for a ferry ride is $10. So now we're saying the first part, we said he only owed him $10. Now let's say during that time, we're saying he could have caught fish. But who says he would have been catching $90 worth of fish? What if he would have been only catching $20 worth? Do you only have to give him 30? So one way of looking at it is, yes, you're only obligated to give him then 30. 10 for the normal amount for a ferry ride, and 20 because he could have caught fish during that time.
But he has to know.
You figure you ask among other fishermen in that area or whatever how much would the typical catch for that day.
They seem to tell you to begin with that usually fishes are easy.
Yeah.
They
have
to tell you before he charges you.
Yeah. But the other way that
$10,
doesn't matter. Let's assume that $10 as a standard thing, whether you're one person or the other. Anyway, there are a number of Rishonim who say, and this is actually passed in the halacha, that no, if it turns out the guy had some loss, for example, in this case he could have got $20 worth of fish, then already you're obligated in the entire 90. Because it would be similar to, we had a case much earlier in the sector where you live in somebody's house without paying them rent, where we said if you cause any kind of damage to the place, even if just, for example, the walls are now dirtier than they were before, you become obligated to pay the full amount of rent. Similarly over here, there is if the guy had no loss at all, if he wasn't going to be fishing anyway, then he's only entitled to his $10. But if he was going to be fishing and could have caught $20 worth of fish, you already become obligated to pay him the other $90.
Why?
That's the point. Once you're chayev in some amount of loss, namely he lost something because of you, then you become obligated in the full amount that you told him you're going to pay.
For why?
Because that's called the gaugul and all that stuff. Still not necessarily though, because again, if it's whether it's because of the point of that he's doing a mitzvah or the point that it's because it's an onus, either way, not necessarily is that reason enough, even if it is after hours, to take more. Again, to a certain extent, dina de machosa dina comes in over here also, or not really dina de machosa dina, but minigam makam. We'll talk about it on the base. If it is the common situation that when you hire somebody after hours, you expect it to pay more. Then we factor that in.
The reasoning can go indefinite. So let's say I go see a diamond dealer to estimate the value of diamond of 1 carat. So during the time that he values my 1 carat diamond, you could say, well, you know what? I could have valued 10 carat diamond.
Indeed, and that's a fair point. So it's really a question, was there something else that he could have been doing during that time?
He could have anything.
Not invent. We're talking about where we know that, in this case, we know he's a fisherman, for example. In that case, we know that that's not a question of inventing. So you make up an advance. You make a kinyan if you need to. What amount he's going to charge you for it, and that's that. If you don't like his price, then go elsewhere. Yeah. Okay. So the same thing over here. Then the point is, since the guy is losing his wine, therefore the owner of the oil is going to be of the honey is going to be responsible to pay the full value of it. Because he is actually losing out, like in this case of the ferryman who's losing out on the fishing.
There's an assumption that oil is worth more than wine.
It's not oil, honey. Actually, honey is worth more than wine. Yeah, that's the assumption. Yeah.
So it's the expression that makes him
agree. No, it's not so much the expression. The fact that he says v'scharcha implies that there's more than the regular schar over here. It's not just a dinner. It's not just the schar for taking me across, because I understand nobody charges that much. That's what I'm saying, because since he said bischarcha, the word bischarcha implies that there's something extra that needs to be factored in over here, namely the fish that you could have caught.
So let me ask you a question. By that logic, anyone who's asking you a medical question, I could charge him $250 because I could have been doing something else.
Were you going to be? What? If you weren't going to be anyway, if you were going to be, that's, again, in this case, it's not that he could have fished. Of course, anybody who has a ferry could fish. Does he regularly, as he goes on his ferry, is he fishing? Would he have been ready like this? You know, he's taking the guy across. He'll start fishing, and the guy is telling him, "I don't have time for that. Put away your net and let's get going."
So he had to be about to do something.
But it would have to be pretty obvious that he was going to be
at the same time as the other one.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So the Mishnah continues. Shotef ner chamorei v'chamor chaveiro. If a river swept away his donkey and somebody else's donkey, shelo yavam monofolo. We had a similar case. So his donkey is worth 100. The other guy's donkey is worth 200. He abandons his to get drowned and saves the other guy's. We said again, he only gets his chayav. But if he said, "I'll save mine and then you, I'll save yours and you pay me for mine," then he's chayav. So why do we need two cases, barrels and donkey? We need both then. the Iyash Min and Kamayim, because if we were only told the first case, you would say, in the case of the barrel, you would say, you would say, they are fine. If you specifically say that I'm paying the owner of the honey says, I'll pay you for the full amount of your wine, then he becomes chayev. Mishum Dibi Adayim Kaposid, because the one who owns the wine is actually pouring out. He's actually doing the Adayim, going and destroying his own thing in order to save, pouring out his wine in order to save the other guy's honey. Avalhaf of the Mamela, here it's just happening on its own. They're both being swept away by the river. Neima Aimla Sotta, you would say maybe even if he said, I'll pay you for yours, maybe even then you could still say Mashat Dani Ba and say that I'm not obligated to pay you for the full value of it. Because it's not like I specifically did anything. I abandoned my donkey. I didn't throw it into the water. But not necessarily. Again, if they made up, then that's one thing. But if he's doing it on his own, I'm not necessarily obligated to pay you for more. He's a volunteer, basically. I'm not necessarily obligated to pay you for more than you would pay a worker to do this kind of thing. The Iyashmin and Seif, on the other hand, if we were only told the Seif for the case of the donkey, you would say, you would say, if it was Stam, if they didn't make up anything, then he's only entitled to a Scha Mishim D'Mamela, for exactly that reason, because it's just happening all on its own. Avol Hasam D'Biyadayim, but in the case of the barrels where he's actually pouring out his wine, Eimachu B'Stam Yoyev L'Jimei Kula, so you would think even if he didn't specify, he should be obligated to pay him the full value of his wine, Shricha, and therefore we need to clarify that the same din applies to both cases.
Only thing I think is a little bit confused when everyone's being pulled into order.
No, not necessarily everything. You have. It happened that these two donkeys were standing too close to the edge or whatever. No, we're not necessarily talking about everything.
It's happening right now.
So you need two cases.
Because you would think that the din might not apply equally about that. Bominate of Kahana Mirab. Yorav Lahafzil, what happens if the one with the $100 donkey went to save the $200 donkey, but Allah Shaloi Me'elo. Meanwhile, so let's say they made up in advance that he's going to be paid for the full $100 for his donkey, that he's abandoning to its fate. So he went to save the $200 donkey. Meanwhile, his own got out of the water on its own. His own donkey got out of the water on its own. Mahu, what's the din? Is he still entitled to his $100? Amalei, so he says, yes. Mishmaya Rechimu Alei. Yes. Yes, because the Eibishter had Rachmanos on him. In other words, at that point, his donkey was basically Hester. So, fine, he lost his donkey at that point. In the end, it came out on its own. He had nothing to do with it. That was the Eibishter did him a favor. He's still entitled to be paid by the other guy.
So you're the Eibishter,
huh? The Eibishter one. Yeah, sure. I saw an interesting thing, by the way, where they talk about this kind of thing in connection with if you break something of somebody's and it's going to be paid for by insurance, are you necessarily responsible to pay him as well? The different achronim discuss that, whether we can apply the same thing over here, they're reimbursing you, so therefore I'm not responsible, or maybe not. Maybe that's a separate thing. You have a separate side deal with the insurance company, doesn't pass through the mazik. No, because we're talking about over here the case where they made up in advance. You let yours go, you save mine, and I'll pay you $100. Yeah.
No,
so we're saying he's. Kihod Rav Safra, as we have a case with Rav Safra, have a ka'odu b'shayarta. He was one time going in a caravan. Lavinu ahu ari. And a lion started accompanying them. Now, having a lion along with your caravan is a good thing in a way, because then the bandits won't attack you, other wild animals won't attack you. On the other hand, the lion has to be fed, otherwise they'll turn on you. So, So every night they would send one of the donkeys of one of them to the lion, and he would eat it. They made up among themselves. They made a real binding kinyan and everything. Each person has spare donkeys with them this summer, like nowadays you carry a spare tire or something. So every person is responsible every night to give away one donkey to feed the lion.
Wow.
Yeah. When it came to Safra, he put the donkey available for the lion to eat, but it didn't eat it. Now, it's not that he didn't eat it because it was full from the previous one. He didn't eat it because that day, he didn't feel like eating it, a stomach ache or whatever. the Kodim Rav Safra Vazachabe. So Rav Safra got up early and took it back. In other words, it's the same kind of thing. We don't say, in other words, that Rav Safra is still responsible to pay his share towards everybody else, the fact that everybody else bought one donkey to this line. And we don't say that because, again, Mishma Yeruchim Rabbe, his donkey was basically Hector. So he lost it in that sense, the fact that he's able to get it back. Why actually does he have to get up early to make sure to be zeichen it back? Even if somebody else were to take it, he'd be entitled to get it back from that person. Because when he was masquer, he was only masquer having in mind that the lion would eat it. He's not masquer for anybody to take. He's masquer in the sense that the lion can eat it.
Did it work?
He did not make it hefker for everybody else. Yeah, it's like putting food in front of an animal or something. That's exactly what it is, putting food in front of an animal. In fact, Tosfos makes the distinction over here that if the lion was attacking, for example, then sure, everything is hefker because it's going to be hard to get it away from the lion. But here where the lion is accompanying them and they're keeping it well fed, and yeah, sometimes it might not eat because it's full or whatever. So in this case, the reason it didn't eat isn't because it was full, it's because it had a stomach ache or whatever. Nevertheless, there's still the fact of the matter is that you can't consider that it was hefker for the whole world. The answer is Amalei. So Ravina answers, Rav Safra b'dav for the milta u'davar. You're right. Technically, Rav Safra could have waited until later. Somebody could have taken it, and then he'll take him to a din tor. He didn't want that whole hassle, so he just made sure to get it back early before anything developed. L'dav for the milta to make things easier. Bamine Rav Mirebi. Now the other way around. Yorav lahatzav lehitzomav. What happens if you went to save? You again, they made this deal. You save my $200 donkey. Yours will get lost, but I'll reimburse you for it. He went to try and save it, and he couldn't. The $200 one also ended up drowning. What's the din? Is he entitled to payment? He's not entitled to pay me. Is he at least entitled to payment as a worker? He says to him, that's Taka Shaila. That's a good question. The answer is Ein Le'el Eschare. All he's entitled to is a schar. So he is entitled to a schar, but not his full 100. So Rab asked him, wait a minute, I have a braisa. If you hire a worker to bring kruv is a cabbage, dermaskin in Rashi says two possibilities. Either it means plums or it's some kind of herb. Whatever it is, there's things that are good for sick people. L'choyla, for a sick person. So the shliach goes and brings the kruv or the dermaskin in, and he finds the guy has died or he got better. The din is that the person who hired him for it has to give him his full pay. And full pay, Tosfos points out, means even full pay implies even if he was hired at more than the normal amount. If he was hired for the normal amount, okay, then there's no question. Of course, Rebbe also said he's entitled to his regular pay. But here we're talking about you hired him for more than the normal amount, and you still have to give him the full amount. Why? Amalei, so Rebbe tells him, be dummy. How do you think you compare them? Say in that case, the shliach accomplished his shlichus. It's a side thing. He brought back the crew. Not his problem that the chole passed away or whatever. In this case, he didn't actually accomplish his shlichus. His job was to save the animal, and he didn't. So therefore, yeah.
The shlichus was to bring
the crew, right. So some Mephoshim do distinguish whether the deal was that he's being paid for his effort or for what he accomplishes. If he's supposed to be paid for his effort, there's no question he gets paid. But if he's supposed to be getting paid for what he accomplished, then that's what we're talking about over here. Because the fact is he didn't accomplish it. Okay.
So it has to be predefined.
Yeah. Again, to a certain extent, it depends on minigam makom, and it depends on what kind of work we're talking about. You know, there's different kinds of jobs. We all know. You know, I mean, you hire a plumber. You're not hiring him for to do an effort to fix your sink. You know, you want the sink fixed. Otherwise, you're not paying him. You know, I think. And there's other kinds of job where it's the effort that's the more important thing. Turn it up on. If you have a caravan going through the desert, and a band of armed bandits come to rob it. And what happened was members of the caravan were able to buy them off with some money. So how do we figure out a fair distribution of that amount that they paid? Machashvin, lefi mamon ve'en machashvin lefi nefashos. We figure it out based on how proportionately to how much money each person is carrying, not based on the number of people. Because this Gaius that came to rob the caravan, they don't care how many people there are in it. They're not necessarily coming to kill. They're coming for money. So therefore, the more money you have, the more proportionately you have to pay towards the expenses of saving them. On the other hand, this caravan, if they hire a guide to take them through the desert to keep them away from the dangerous places or whatever, who goes in front of them, then they also take into consideration the number of people, because if they lose their way, then that's sakanas nefashos. So therefore, it depends on the more people in your group, the greater the danger.
And then after
running
to
that
many
people, yes. Right. But, so we're assuming over here the Gaius was only after money, right? So then, yeah. But the tire, on the other hand, is saving their money, but he's also saving their nefashos by making sure they don't get lost. Therefore, you do it according to nefashos. Again, Mepharshim discussed what does that mean. Does it mean half according to money, half according to nefashos, or are there different proportions, whatever? However, the bottom line is don't do differently than the local minag of donkey drivers. If in this particular area the minag is that you hire a tire, you hire a guide, and you pay him only the fee mom, strictly the fee mom, or strictly the fee nefashos, then you do that. Again, minag amakim is a powerful thing. Minag amakim, meaning the minag of the place they came from, the minag of the place where they got their donkey. Yeah. Another din on this connection, Rashoyin Achamorim Lahasnais, the donkey drivers are allowed to make a condition among themselves, Shkomi Shiyoyvet Lechamor, that anybody whose donkey gets lost, or dies, or whatever, Mam Yamid Lechamor Acher, then they will all together chip him and get him another donkey. Sort of like insurance. The Kusya, however, they can add the detail, or not even they're adding the detail, it's assumed that if Kusya means Kshia, if the guy was careless, and therefore his donkey died, then they're not obligated to. Yeah, you don't get an insurance payment if it was your negligence. Yeah. Shaloi b'kutzya ma'amin. So if it was not careless, then they have to get him another donkey. V'im amar tznuli v'ani eshmer. Now, suppose he says, instead of getting me another donkey, you give me the money, and I won't necessarily buy another donkey, but I'll continue watching the other donkeys with you. Or another girsa is that he says, you give me the money, and I'll go buy a donkey myself. Either way, ain't shomim lo. They do not have to listen to him. Because the point is, they say, part of this whole insurance pool over here, we're all in this together. We're all in this together. If you have a donkey, among all of ours, you'll be careful when it's your turn to watch, that you'll be extra careful to watch, just like the rest of us are. Mashenkin, if you don't have a donkey in the pool, you don't have as much of an incentive to watch ours carefully. Therefore, they can tell them that now. Okay, so the question is, pshita, in that case, then that's obvious. The answer is, yes, but suppose he has another donkey already. So he has two donkeys in the caravan. He had two donkeys in the caravan. One of them died. And now he's saying, you know what, I only need one donkey, so just give me the money, and if I decide to use it to buy a second donkey, I will, but it'll be at my discretion. Still, we don't say that. Mao de tema hokamintole. So he would say, okay, look, he's got a donkey of his own to watch, so therefore that should be enough for him to still be able to be in the pool. Kamashmalan, therefore the chiddush is that no, shining nintirusa dechad min tirusa de beitre. Yes, but it's still different how carefully you watch one animal than two. So they can tell him, you're in the pool with us, lachatchila with two donkeys. Two donkeys you're going to watch extra carefully. Now you're only going to have one. You're going to slack off a little bit. And therefore we can't have that. We need you to be just as vigilant as you were before. And if not, then you don't get your insurance payout. Another din, similarly. So now we were talking about donkeys. Now we're going to have similar dinim as far as ships. You have to realize, by the way, in the Gemara, most of the time when they talk about ships, they're not talking about like you think of from history, like ships across the Atlantic Ocean or something, or even the Mediterranean or something. Your average person who had a ship was more like it would go in the rivers and then, you know, like fairly local areas, more like ferries or barges or canoes or whatever, like nowadays. Yeah, well, obviously they didn't have motors, but the point is, we're not talking about boats with huge numbers of oars. Let's say, you know, we're talking basically barges. We find in places in the Gemara that would be pulled along by animals or people pulling them with ropes from the riverbank. If they had an oar, it would be like one or two oars or something. Yeah, so that sort of thing. So So if you have a ship that was going in the sea, and a storm comes up and is going to drown it, and so they lightened it by throwing stuff overboard. We figure it out strictly based on the weight, not based on the value. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says, let's say, for example, one person had 100 litra of gold and threw it overboard. You don't know, 100 litra of gold, let's say, is worth a lot more than 100 litra of iron. So if somebody else has 100 litra of iron, you can't tell him, has several hundred litra of iron, let's say, you can't tell him, well, you have to throw over 600 litra of iron because that'll be the equivalent of my 100 litra of gold. No, 100 litra is 100 litra because when it comes to the ship sinking, it doesn't matter the value, it matters the weight. But again, they shouldn't do any differently than the custom of the local boat, of the local boat people. No, obviously, if they didn't throw anything overboard yet, of course, you should have the guy throw his lead over first before you have the guy throw over his gold, no question about it. We're talking about the guy with the gold already threw it over. So therefore, he can't now tell the guy, well, I suffered $1,000 loss, therefore you have to suffer $1,000 loss also. No, it goes by weight. But again, value shana
minigas. What is the value of the weight? Weight of what?
The weight of the actual, the weight of the gold, the weight of the iron.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. That's what's going to save the boat,
yeah. But again, value shana minigas upon him. Again, they shouldn't do any differently than local boatmen usually do. If they have a minig in this place to go based on value, then that's what you do. But ashoyin as upon him lahasnim shkomish of the svina yamid le svina. Again, the boatman can make a deal between them. Again, like an insurance pool that anybody whose boat is lost, they get him another boat. Again, of the labor kusya ein mamid. If he loses it through carelessness, then they don't have to pay him out. They don't have to get him another one. Shalom b'kusim amid in life. It's not because of carelessness. They do have to get him another one. The e-pirish, here, by the way, the Gemara doesn't mention the point about if he wants the money instead, maybe because with boats, you don't have to watch them as much as donkeys. I don't know. So maybe in that case, he would be entitled. Not as much as donkeys, though. It's not like they're going to wander off. But whatever. So maybe in that case, then, I don't know. I didn't see anything about this, but maybe in that case, he is entitled to get the cash payout. Okay. One other detail, however, if this boat driver went to a place where the boats don't usually go, then they lost his boat because of that, then they don't have to get him another one. So, well, the question is pshita. The answer is loy pshita. We're talking about, we don't mean a different place as like he went into the ocean or something. We mean a different place as it's the same river, but loy pshita, the minisin mirachi chad ashla. Suppose you're talking about, now rivers are usually bigger in Nissen because the snow is melting, so the river is wider. So in Nissen, now, so they had their unit of measurement for these things was a rope. They had a certain standard size rope which they'd use for a measurement how far away from the edge of the river are you. Again, they could be maybe these ropes that they use for pulling the barges, whatever it is. So suppose that in Nissen they only have to stay one rope length away from the edge. That's enough for them to be in deep enough water that the ship will be able to go, that the boat will be able to go. Over Tishrei Merachki Tishrei Ashli, but in Tishrei, when the rivers are smaller, they have to go two rope lengths away in order to be deeper in the river. So, because of Yom Nissan, Lamakam Tishrei, so now what happens? During Nissan time, he goes in the middle of the river where he would usually go Tishrei time, further out in the middle. And then because the current is stronger over there than the boat sinks. So you might say he's not really, so you can't really consider it such pshia. He's used to, from Nissan time and on, he's been used to using that part of the river. Not Nissan time, Tishrei time, he's been used to using that part of the river. It didn't occur to him that now with Nissan time and he should be closer to the edge, he shouldn't be so close to the middle. Kamash v'lo, that's the chiddush, that no, we don't say that, he's being careless, and he's not entitled to his insurance.
Why is he being careless?
Because the fact is he went in a part of the river where the current is faster, and we're fine, Tishrei time, you have to go there because you have no choice. The banks are dried up. But Nissan time, what are you doing going over there? Go closer to the edge, like everybody else does.
But
yeah.
Nissan time, there could have been less water.
Nissan time, there is going to be more water because
there might have been a drought.
No. We're talking about that we know what the situation, we know what conditions were in the river.
Same conditions as usual.
Yeah. And he, instead of going closer to the edge like they're supposed to do, he went in the middle. Yeah. And I think that Ivan has a gift for the other way around, that that he went to Tishrei in the area where he would usually go at Nisan, and therefore the water was shallower over there and he got stuck. Same difference there. Okay. Turn it up on him. If you have a caravan going through the desert, and again, a bunch of armed bandits are coming to rob them, and one of them gets up and saves the merchandise or whatever, then what he saves goes to the common pool. Not the common pool as in it's all Hefker, but the common pool as everybody gets their thing back.
He doesn't get it.
He doesn't get any, he just gets his own. But if he says, what I'm saving for myself, it's a lasma, then he's entitled to keep it. In other words, if he said that and they don't all go and join him, then it means that they were miyash, basically. So that's what we have to figure out. Hey, if everybody is able to save their own, then they're not miyash. So even if he says, I'm going to be matzil, so what? They weren't miyash. It was an easy situation. Fine, you go ahead and do it. It's not like we're miyash. It's easy enough to do that we don't all need to be involved. So why shouldn't they not be allowed to take their own stuff back? If it's impossible for them to save it, then why in the first case is it all answer? We're not talking about over here a caravan of people who have nothing to do with each other. We're talking about these are partners, well, two or more shutfin. Yeah. The point is, therefore, so whether the other partners would have been able to save the situation or not, this one partner gets up. The point is that in a case like this, where it's all about to get destroyed anyway, one partner is allowed to dissolve the partnership without the consent of the other one in order to save what he can. Therefore, Omar, Polly. So therefore, if he says, I'm saving for myself, it means I'm dissolving the partnership. Whatever I can save is going to me.
You can do it on your own.
Yeah, that's what we're saying. Loy Omar, Loy Polly. But if he didn't save anything, then he's still a shutef. So a shutef is responsible to save things on behalf of the partnership. So therefore, it goes la'emsa. It goes each member of the partnership gets their own. No, and that's what we're saying. In a case like this, where it was going to be destroyed anyway, the makam ibud mamun, then you're allowed to dissolve the partnership and try to save whatever you can. Rav Amar. Another answer, Hachava Pyolana skin, and we're not talking about over here about partners. We're talking about over here about a worker, meaning this person who went and saved, who went and said, Ani Atto, and goes and saves, was hired by the members of the caravan or whatever. So, V'chirav, now, this din that we're saying that there can be a case where he can say, I'm not acting as a worker anymore, I'm acting independently, and whatever I save is going to be for myself, goes according to what Rav says, the Amar Rav. A worker is allowed to quit from the job even in the middle of the day.
Wow.
One second. So as long as he doesn't quit, it's as if it's in the reshus of the balabas. Therefore, it hits a lambda. But if he says I'm saving for myself, then it means that he's saying I'm quitting the job. Now the Gemara is going to tell us in a second why you're allowed to do that. Because Jewish people are not slaves. But the Gemara in Bava Metzia talks about that a worker is not allowed to quit in the middle of the job if it's a davar ha'avad. If his quitting is going, not that he's not allowed to quit, but that he's responsible then for any losses that are caused by him quitting where it's a davar ha'avad, where it's something time sensitive, for example. So why doesn't that apply over here? So there's a couple of different approaches that the Foshim have. One of them is because over here, one of them is that only applies if, so let's say, for example, at the beginning, the balabas could have hired other workers. Now, like this, you started the job, and now there's no other workers available. Then, because davar ha'avad, you're not allowed to quit. But if achila, he wouldn't have been able to get any other workers anyway. Then you're not causing him any more loss by quitting in the middle than he would have had in the beginning.
Yes, you are, because the work that this guy was supposed to do was lost. Precisely.
No, but the point is, if there wasn't anybody else available in the first place, so he would have lost to begin with. He wouldn't have been able to get anybody else. The only one he's able to get is you. And you, therefore, if you, when you're quitting now, so Vakhila, if he had not gotten you, the thing would have been a Dabra Abad. Now, like this, you're quitting in the middle, it's also a Dabra Abad. You're not causing him any more loss than he would have otherwise had.
If he stayed, he would not...
He
would
if he stayed, but he's not obligated to stay because he leaving Israel,
I understand.
Okay.
That's a different reason.
That's
but
what I'm saying.
He's causing a loss.
But he's not causing any more loss than there would have been beforehand. That's the point.
Of course he is.
No, he's not.
Because he was counted in the labor that was needed for the work and could not be replaced, therefore he's...
Again, the Balabas we're talking about couldn't have hired anybody else. First of all, if the Balabas is able to hire somebody else now, then it's also a problem. But we're talking about... So there's a few possible cases. There is where he could have hired somebody else. So it's not replacement. There's Lachila. When he contracted for the job, there's Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. So Reuven ended up getting hired for the job. Now he's quitting. Therefore, he's causing the guy a loss. Lachila, the Balabas could have hired Shimon, and Shimon would have completed the job. Could have hired Levi, and Levi would have completed the job. So Reuven, therefore, is responsible.
Morning, you stand the wing, and you climb down for the day. And after 2 hours, they go out and quit.
No, but that's something different. It's related, but I'm saying there's something else. There can be where there were a bunch of workers available. You picked one, and now he's put in the middle of the day. That's one thing. Versus where there was no other worker available anyway. If there was no other worker,
but the fact that there was no other worker doesn't mean there was an automatic loss.
Because we're talking about something that's time sensitive. We're talking about if you can't find
it.
To give an example from the mission over there in Bava Metzia, let's say for example you have there's a wedding coming up and you need poles to be brought for a chuppah or something. It's time sensitive. If you don't have them brought in time, you're not going to have a wedding.
But then you should have said it beforehand that you know what, I might leave during the day, especially.
That's what we're saying. Hold on. So that's one way of looking at it, is we're saying. So if at the time the Balabas could have hired other workers who we could assume would complete the job, meanwhile he happened to hire this guy who quits in the middle, then it's a double of it and he's responsible.
How about if he couldn't hire?
No, but if he couldn't hire anybody else, he wouldn't have had his poles for his chuppah anyway.
So therefore there was a greater reason for the guy to say, I might leave during the day.
No, because if he doesn't hire him in the first place, he's not going to have his poles. And like this, he hired him and he's not still finishing the job, he's also not having his poles. There's no greater loss in that case. As opposed to similar idea, though. The point is that's the point. In other words, the one way of looking at it is like this. If they hadn't hired the guy in the first place, let's say there was nobody else available to hire for this job, you know that there's a possibility of bandits, so you can't find anybody else, then yeah, if the bandits attack, you're going to lose everything. Like this also, when the guy is here and he's quitting in the middle, you're losing everything. Anyway, that's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it doesn't really matter who could have been hired first or not. The other way of looking at it, since it is a Dabra Avod, since a Dabra Avod over there means that the guy has the thing in his possession, for example, and just it's not getting accomplished. You know, the poles are someplace else. They're just, you know, they need to be brought here or whatever. Here, the actual money is basically becoming hefker because the bandits are taking it, and therefore that might be a different issue. So therefore, so when he quits the job, the reason why he's allowed to do that is because of a different consideration. Because the pasuk is "Kilibinei Yisrael Avadim," the Jewish people are my slaves. The Eved says, "V'le'avadim la'avadim." They're not slaves to other slaves, so a yid can never be a slave to another one. And for him, having to work involuntarily would be like making him a slave. That's an exception. He works for 6 years and that's that. Fine. But ordinarily, a poel is not an Eved to another Eved. Therefore, he has the right to quit in the middle. Again, if it's a Dover or Avod, then he'll be responsible. Then, depending on the circumstances, he may be responsible for the cost of what it costs to get other workers to finish the job. We'll learn about that in Bava Metzia. It depends on the circumstances, yeah.
Isn't he committed to his work? He said he was going to work.
We're not saying that he's doing something. We're not saying he's doing the right thing, but he is allowed to. He is allowed to.
On
the basis that he's not an Eved, yeah. Okay. Rav Ashi, here's another answer. The case over here is that it's not that it could easily be saved. It's not that it's literally impossible to save and it's like a 1 in a million chance. It's difficult, but it could be done. Therefore, Gali Daite La. Therefore, since ordinarily, since under normal circumstances, it wouldn't be, the majority of the time, it wouldn't be salvageable. So if he says, I'm doing La'afmi, then Gali Daite, if he specifically says that I think this can be salvaged and I'm keeping it for myself, fine, he can keep it for himself. Because then if the owner didn't say anything, it means they were miyash. Yes. Loi Gali Daite. But if he didn't say anything, then La'emsa, because then they weren't miyash.
No,
we're talking about Rashi saying never mind partners, never mind workers. It could be a bunch of people in the caravan who are they have no business relation or know anything to each other. But because it's Yachalasa, therefore it depends. If a guy specifically says, since it is possible to do it Idea Chak, I'm gonna try it. If they don't say anything, then it means they're willing to be Miyash. I mean they agree that whatever he can keep for himself. Whereas if they object to something else, then he can say, I'm not going to bother. But if he didn't say anything, then we assume that they still are retaining ownership of it. They don't consider the situation to be so desperate that they're ready to be miyash. Okay. Mishnah says, Hagoyzel sodem achaveri, if somebody steals a field from somebody else, on a tlua mesikin, and then he stole the actual field. He took over the field. He threw the guy out of the field, and then put up a fence over there, put up a combination lock, whatever, and that's it. It's mine. Yeah. On a tlua mesikin, and then mesikin took it. Now mesikin actually translates as anosin, so it means people who forced him to give it up. So basically another form of robbery, basically. But we'll see in the Gemara that actually what we may be talking about this is going to be kind of like an organized criminal group like the mafia or something that they force people to show them what's available for them to take. So in Makas Medina, if it's a general white they don't pay for it. When you have, Rashi points out a few blocks ago, when you have the word anosim in connection with gazlonim, then it means they pay for it. When you have the word anosim unspecified, then it means that they just take it, they force you to give it without, and then threaten you, whatever, and then you. So, in makas medina, if this is a makas medina, meaning that there are other people whose fields are also getting seized by these mistaken like that, so then the gazlon can tell the original owner, in other words, I'm not responsible to reimburse you, because if it had stayed by you, it also would have been taken by the mistaken. So I haven't caused you to lose anything that you otherwise wouldn't have anyway. Imachmas a gazlan, but if it's because of the gazlan, as we will learn about in the Gemara, chayev lahamid lo sada achar, then he's responsible for getting him another field or the value of it. So first thing,
who people we're talking about is the owner,
the original owner, the gazlan, and now you have the mistaken took it. So we're saying if it was taken machmas a gazlan because of the gazlan, what do we mean because of the gazlan? We're going to talk about it in a minute. In the Gemara, then it's his fault, and then he's responsible to get him another field.
And not with the mesikin.
Right, you can't get it from the mesikin. The mesikin are with the mafia. They're beyond the law of the law. Yeah.
So
similar, but wait. So the Gemara starts off with a linguistic point. Amr of Nachmanides, man betani mesikin lo mishtabish, or man betani mitzikin lo mishtabish. So the two versions of this Mishnah are going around. One had the word mesikin with a samach, and the other mitzikin with a tzadik. Tzadim actually pronounced them almost identical, so there may have been, Taka. Neither one is wrong. Both of them have a reason to be correct. Man betani mitzikin lo mishtabish, tzibim matzor v'matzik. So you have the expression in the Tosecha, yesterday's parasha, that in a siege and in deprivation, so we see that matzik, mitzikin, means like deprivation, means times of trouble. So mitzikin can mean troublesome people. Well, man betani mitzikin lo mishtabish, tzibim. Also in the Tosecha, you have a pasuk that says, yoresh hatzlotzal, that all the fruit of your trees, the tzlotzal will inherit it. Well, actually says not inherit, but make it poor, whatever. Or metagumin and yachsinine sakah. And the tagum on it is the sakah will inherit it. So Rashi explains sakah means locust. So therefore, the tzlotzal in Hebrew is a kind of locust. It's in Aramaic, it's called sakah. So the point is, the pasuk is not a pasuk. So therefore, we're comparing a gazlan like this who goes the mafia, who goes and grabs fields, are like locusts descending on the field. So therefore, mesikin means like locust-like people. Tosfos says a little differently, that sakah means actually, that sakah actually in the pasuk over there does not actually mean locust. Fakir, the pasuk is the one that's using the metaphor. It's using locust as a metaphor for enemy armies that are going to take over everything. So therefore, yeah, mesikin means enemy, means enemies. Yeah. Okay. So im machmas a gazlan chayev. So we said if it was taken by the masikin because of a gazlan, then the gazlan is chayev to reimburse the original owner. So hey chidami, what's the situation? Are you talking about that when we say machmas a gazlan means that all the gazlan's fields were seized by the masikin? They had something particular against him, let's say, and they took all his fields, including this one, but not anybody else's. Then of course he's chayev. Hamadeshet shamet minayim makas medina hichola. You already said if it's a makas medina, then he's potter. This isn't a makas medina because it affected only him. Eloi loy, and if not, then not. And the answer is loy tzricha. No, you need the Mishnah statement for a different case. You're not talking about where the Masikin took all of his field necessarily. You're rather talking about da'achve achvuyi. You're talking about that he showed them which field to take. So now we're going to start talking about the whole concept of a moiser. Basically, what it means is that he brought them. They're going around. So Rashi says, for example, he hears that the king's officials are going and trying to steal fields. Now we're not talking about a case, obviously, with dinner de mafos. We're talking about a king who just decides to take them illegally. Third world countries, like yeah. So he hears that they're going around taking people's fields, and he goes and shows them and says, "Look, there's Pliny's field. Take it." So therefore, that's what he's chayav, because if it hadn't been for him, it wouldn't have been taken. Lishnachri. Now, another version of this is akum. Another version is that we're talking about that machmas and gazlan means that the goyim forced him to show them what's available for the taking. And they tell him achvuye arasa. They're telling him, show us which are your fields. We're going to take them. And along with his fields, he shows them that one. So then, in the first case, we consider him responsible because he had no business. They weren't forcing him to hachila. They were just telling him, we're looking for fields to take, what's available, and he shows them that one. The second case, they are forcing him, but Tosfos, not he volunteered. In the second case, they're forcing him. However, Tosfos says, fine, they're asking for your field. By what right are you going and showing them a field that you stole from somebody else? Therefore, you're fired. So now the Gemara is going to get into a whole discussion, which is going to go from here until the middle of Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis, or almost until the next Mishnah, on the whole concept of Mesiva. So we're not even going to be talking about being Moisa, another Jew, to the government as in to be jailed or executed. That's a whole other issue. Here we're talking about strictly being Moisa Mammon. But we're going to see from our Gemara that it's pretty serious stuff also.
Any government, even a democratic
government. There is a good deal of discussion among the Achronim to what extent that applies. We're talking about obviously the context of here, where we're talking about Mammon, is talking about obviously, as we said, a government, the third world government or whatever, that's taking things illegally. To what extent it applies, this concept of being most of somebody else's money when it's a democratic government? Well, one thing that bears into that is what we said the other day, that a Jew testifies on behalf of a goy in a goyish court against another yid in a goyish court and causes them to lose money that he wouldn't have up the halacha. Then we said we put him in chayyim until he reimburses the guy. So that comes into play, because even if it's a democratic government, fine, but not necessarily up the halacha would this guy have lost that money. So that factors into it. So you have to consider, would he have been liable al piyah locha anyway, or would there have been enough evidence to be mechayev al piyah locha? So how much dinah d'machusa dinah applies in these cases is a whole other discussion. Dinah d'machusa dinah definitely applies to things as far as taxes. There's no question about that. But does it apply more generally to dinah mamonis ben adam l'chaveiro? There is a great deal of discussion about that among the poskim. It's far from simple. So there was a certain person who once misikin like this were coming, and he showed them a pile of wheat that belonged to the Reish Galutna, and they took it. Also, so the case came to Rav Nachman, Chayver Rav Nachman the Shalomi, so Rav Nachman obligated him to pay. Yosef Rav Yosef Achorid Rav Huna Bachia. Now, at that point, Rav Yosef was sitting as one of the Talmidim behind Rav Huna Bachia. Yosef Rav Huna Bachia Kameid Rav Nachman. And Rav Huna Bachia was sitting right in front of Rav Nachman. As we'll see later on in the story of Rav Kahana and Kuf Yud Zayin, the Talmidim used to sit in rows, the more important Talmidim, the more prominent Talmidim in the front, and the lesser Talmidim further and further back. So like this. Rav Huna Bachia is one of the greater Talmidim of Rav Nachman, and Rav Yosef is like one of the second level Talmidim. You just paskin that this guy is obligated to reimburse the Reish Galusa. Is that mitzad ad-din? Is it the actual, the regular din? Or is it a knas? Because he master. Amalei, so Rav Nachman tells him, asnithini. You have it's our Mishnah. So basically, the point of the question, whether it's mammon or knas, Tosfos explains over here that the Gemara is going to tell us later on in Suvya, in Kofi Zayin and Mideis, that this whole concept, why should a Moisa be chayev, Lakota, all he did is say, or point, or whatever, he's chayev with that dinah de garmi, which we learned before, dinah de garmi, Rav Meir holds, and this is the halacha that you're chayev on. Even, you weren't mazik the thing via dayim, but it was indirect, again, what dinah de garmi is, we talked about a lot before, whether it means that it's indirect, but there's direct causation, or whether it means it was bemezid versus b'shoigeg, or all the different permutations that we went through over there. Whatever it is, it's dinu d'garmi over here. So therefore, the question basically is it that, so Rashi learns the question is that, is it dinah, and therefore we can say as a general rule, we can learn from this from all other cases of dinu d'garmi, just like you're chayiv over here for a case of dinu d'garmi, so you are chayiv in other cases of dinu d'garmi. Or maybe not. Maybe it's only a knas, and therefore, as the Gemara is going to say, you can't learn from it for other cases. So the one point about it is that's part of the question. Maybe he's canceling him, and maybe as an exceptional measure, he's canceling him because he was moiser. Maybe as a normal thing, you cannot do such a thing. This is the knaf. But in this case, it's a one-time thing, basically. Yes. In general, you can't do dinner knafs in Bava because they don't have smith over there. Only in Eretz Yisrael, yeah.
But another thing, am I totally wrong, or wasn't Rav Nachman related to
him,
so was he like a father or something?
So it does bring in various places, yeah, that he was related to the family. It could be talking about that both sides accepted him as a Dayan, or it could be that maybe he wasn't so closely related. There was probably more than... First of all, he may not have been so closely related for it to be a problem. They were saying it was the Dvei Reish Galusa, it belonged to somebody from the household of the Reish Galusa. Maybe it wasn't a close enough relative. Okay. Anyway, so Dino Iknasa, Omalei, sort of Nachman tells him, Masnizini, look, you see it in our Mishnah. If this man, Imachmas HaGazlan, Chayev Lahim Adlai Soda, we said he's Chayev to pay him. So as a general rule across the board, and we just said that it means where he shows the mistaken. This is exactly the same situation. Buster did not fuck. Okay, after the guy left, so Rav Yosef asked Rav Huna Bachia, what's the difference? Why are you asking whether it's din or knas? E dina e knas. So what's the nafkamina? So he says exactly that. If it's a regular din, then you can derive from it for other cases that a person would be chayev. And if it's a knas, you can't derive from it for if it's a one-time thing. Rashi says, by the way, why would we say that Rav Nachman canceled him? Rashi says mishum derogu b'kach, because he did this as a regular thing. He would be most of Jewish money to goyim. Maybe in other words, if it dinner would mean no matter what, even if it's the first time a person's doing it, you're obligated to pay. Knas would mean only if he makes a habit of it.
They're looking for
stuff to take, for example. So sometimes, again, it could be, we could be talking about stamp bandits, like the mafia or whatever. We could be talking about the king doing it illegally. Like at some point, they need X amount of grain, let's say, to feed their horses or whatever. And instead of paying for it, or instead of collecting it in taxes, in the normal way, they decide to go and start and then to take it illegally, yeah. Who says that you can't learn from a case of knas, that you can't use it as a general rule for other cases? As we learn in a braisa, originally the Chachamim said, now we learned in Gittin that in a case of hezek shein and nikir, where you cause a hezek to something which is only on a ruchniistic level, for example, making somebody's truma tame, midaraisa, you're not obligated to pay for it. You can just say, harei shalach l'panecha. You can take your food back. It's tome, it's worthless for use now, not my problem. Midrabanan, we make him pay. So originally they said that applies only to somebody as batame, somebody else's taris, or bahamanasech, or somebody makes somebody else's wine, yayin nesech. We learned over there in Gittin, does it mean actually that he literally pours it out for Avodah Zarah, or does it mean that he mixes it with Yayin Nesach? Here we're talking according to the opinion, that's primarily according to the opinion, that means actually making it Nesach, actually pouring it out, Avodah Zarah. Chazir Loima, Acham and Dameah. Later on, the Chachamim also decided that it also includes midameya, where somebody mixes in cholin with truma, where now the cholin is worth less. You can you have the whole thing has to be sold to kohenim, and kohenim will only buy it at a cheaper value. Will only buy truma, or in this case, suffolk truma, at a cheaper amount because there are rules about it. If it becomes tame, they can't eat it anymore. They themselves can only eat it matara, etc.
That's not the other guy's problem.
Right. So if you mix 100 times as much cholin with truma, then it's fine. The truma is bottle anyway. There's no problem. But if you mix in less than 100 times as much cholin, the whole thing becomes also to zorin to eat. You have to sell it to kohenim at a cheaper price.
That's
so therefore the guy has a hefty.
That's unfair because the kohenim have to watch themselves. Their tummy, it's not the guy who's selling the merchandise.
The point is, the kohenim are only going to be willing to buy it at a discount price. Therefore the guy now has a loss. You can't force them to buy it for full price. So, chazru ein lo chazru lo. So the implication is, originally the Chachamim did not say that. Later on, they decided, once they decided that medameya is higher, then yes, but if not, then not. My timer, now lechora, why would that be? Why should medameya be any different than the other cases? Lav mishum the knasahu. Lechora, because all these cases, metameh and menasech is all a case of knas, or knasah lo gemirimine, and you can't learn from knas. So there you go, the Chachamim had to specifically add medameya, otherwise you couldn't learn it from the other ones. The answer is loy, not necessarily, because you could say there's a different consideration. Me'ikra savri lehefsid meruba, chashashu lehefsid mu'at lechachashu. The original chachamim who made the sakana figured we're only worried about a hefsid meruba, where you're losing the entire value of the thing. Truma, tama, you're losing the entire value, because all you can use it for is firewood or sprinkling around your house or whatever, like we learned before. You're basically losing the entire value of it. Yayin netzachol, so is also b'ana. But they weren't so concerned about a hefsid mu'at. Okay, you're going to have to sell it at a discount. That wasn't necessarily reason enough to cancel the guy originally. Well, the slave savri lehefsid mu'at nami choshishu, whereas later on they decided that even a hefsid mu'at is worth making a takana about. So not necessarily is it a matter of learning from a knas. There's different kinds. It's a different kind. It's a major hezek versus a minor hezek, so to speak. Okay, the Gemara says, Eini, you're telling me that's true, that's the distinction. Well, Tani Avur did Rabbin, but Avur did Rabbin learned that there was a different version of how it happened. But Rishonah Hayu Amram Hamatamev, the original takana to make a person chayav for hezek shein and nicker was in the case of Matameh and in the case of Medameh, where he misses Truma and Cholin, Chazru Loim Afa Menasech. And then they added also the case of the Menasech, where he makes a Yain Nesach. Again, Chazru Eim Loi Chazru Loi. Now, there you can't say Menasech is Hefsin Meruba. So it's obviously not Hefsin Mu'at versus Hefsin Meruba. The fact that Menasech wasn't included is when you pour it forever to Zara, yeah. And make it also Banah.
So the whole bottle is...
The whole bottle becomes also Banah, yeah. Yeah. So my time, Allah, Mishrim, Belegamin, and Miknasa, evidently because you can't learn from one case of Knas to another. So therefore, they have to specifically say Menasech, otherwise you won't learn it from the others. So there you go. You can't learn it from Knas. The answer is Loi. No. You could say there's a different reason why Menasech wasn't originally included. Me'ikra Savri Kerab Ovin or Lovasoif Savri Kerab Yemia. Because it could be originally they held like Kerab Ovin, which we're going to quote in a second what he says, and later on, the later Chachamim who added Menasech held like Kerab Yemia. Namely, this is going to be the question again of Kamle B'Dirabimim. Person pours out wine for Yain Nesech is worshipping Avodah Zarah and makes him Chayav Mitzah. So, Me'ikra Savri Kerab Ovin. Originally they held like Kerab Ovin, to Amr Kerab Ovin. If somebody shoots an arrow on Shabbos that travels 4 amos in Rosh Hashanah, where therefore he's chayav misa, the korashiroyin b'halichosay, and on the way before the arrow even traveled 4 amos, it ripped through silk garments. Shiroyin means silk. Potter. Then he's potter. At the time that he ripped it, he hadn't yet committed the full malacha because the full 4 amos hadn't gone yet. Because Shari Akira Tzarech Hanochi, because the Akira, the original shooting of the arrow, is a necessary part of the Hanocha, meaning it's all considered one big Maisa, or Mischai B'Nafshoi. And from the beginning to the end of that Maisa, he's Mischai B'Nafshoi. He becomes Chai Misa, therefore come live with the Rabbi, and he's not paying for the silk.
When he shoots an arrow,
because we don't say, according to the Ovin, that when he shot the arrow is when, as soon as the arrow hits the silk, is when he becomes higher for the silk, and he only becomes high mister when it finishes before Amma travel. No, we don't say that, Rav Ovin says. The full travel of the arrow is considered one long, Maisa. And in the middle of it, the silk was ripped. They will come to the
Shabbos. Even after a silk or script or something that stopped the error, it would then be higher.
Indeed, but Rav Ovin said that as long as it did end up traveling four hours, then the Akira and the ripping of the silk happened during that whole Maisa, and they were. Yeah, it happened. Well, not literally together. There was a
when did the Hanukkah shooting?
The Hanukkah is when the arrow lands. Eventually, the arrow lands.
Akira
is when he shoots it.
When he shoots it. Even if it's less, it says, than 4 hours?
No. If it goes less than 4 hours, that's different. You went less than 4 hours. We're talking about it ended up going 4 hours. It just, in the middle of the 4 hours, it ripped the silk.
It went through the silk, yeah.
So therefore, by the same logic, therefore, so even this person picks up this barrel of wine to do nisuch. Now you could argue, on the face of it, when he picks it up, he's already koneh it, bagbo, he becomes chayev for any onsin or whatever that happened to it. Later on, he pours it, he's chayev benafsha for pouring for avodah zarah, but still he was chayev mamon first and nisa afterwards. Therefore, no chum limited avodah. The original chachamim who made the takana did not hold like that. They held like Rav Ovin that you say it's all considered one big action. The picking up is necessary for the pouring. So therefore, it is chum limited avodah. That's why he's potter because he's going to be chayev nisa. All of a sudden, Sabri to Rabbi Yirmiyah, eventually the later Chachamim came to hold like Rabbi Yirmiyah. Do'am Rabbi Yirmiyah? No, we do have to distinguish. Mishas Hagbah Kanye, as soon as he picks up the barrel, he's koinet, and it's chayev in any oinsin that happens to it. Ichayev le mamon, therefore at that point he becomes chayev to pay back for it. Pay mamon. Mishayev v'nafshay, they have a shak nisuch, and he doesn't become mishayev v'nafshay until he actually pours it. So they are two separate things, right? And one thing Mefarshim say is it's not necessarily per se that he's disagreeing with Rav Ovin completely. The difference is with an arrow, once you shot it, you can't get it back. With wine, when you pick it up, you always have the possibility of putting it down before you actually manasseh it. So that's the later Chacham. It's not necessarily that they disagreed with Rav Ovin per se, but they said the case of the wine is more similar to that rather than to the case of the arrow. And therefore you can't pass it. And therefore it goes back to being an ordinary case of nezek. Fine, it would be hezek chain and nicker. But once we're making you chayev for hezek chain and nicker, then we're going to include this as well. But again, not because you can't. The point is, why do they have to add it separately? Not because you can't learn from one knack to another. Maybe you can, but because nisuch is a special case because it involves kol nivud avodah. Another case, going back to this matter of Moisrim, I think what we'll try to do is get to the two dots in the middle of the Amud, and then I think we'll be in good shape for the next couple of days. So another case involving Mesira, Rav Huna bar Yehuda Ikla LeBei Avyoni. Rav Huna bar Yehuda one time came to Bei Avyoni, is the name of the place, also LeKamei de Rava, and he came to see Rava. Apparently Rava was visiting there also. Amalei, and Rava asked him, Klum Maitse Baliyadcha. So while you're traveling around over here, has anything noteworthy happened that you want to tell me about? Any case you passed in on? Amalei says yes. Yisrael shantu over to Chachavim. There was a case of a Yid who was forced by Goyim to show what's available for them to take. The Hera Mamon Chaveri, and he showed somebody else's Mamon that they could take it. Boliyadi, a case came to that, of that came to me. The Chiyavtim, and I obligated them to pay, like we said. However, Amalei, Rava tells him, no, you passed in wrong. Ahada Udalamore, you have to go back, you have to rejudge the case and give that money back to this Moiser, what you took away from him to pay the other guy, you have to take it back from him. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Yisrael Sha'amsu Ovdi Kachavim, if a Yid was forced by Goyim, the Hera Mamon Chaber, and he showed them somebody else's Mamon, Potter, the Imnotov, and Nothan Bayad, but if he picked it up and gave it to them with his hand, then he's Chayim. Even if he was, there are several different opinions about this among the Rishonim. The Rif learns, and most other Rishonim follow suit as well, that the distinction is exactly that. As long as he wasn't nothing, if he was nothing and nothing but yad, if he literally picked it up and gave it to them, then it doesn't matter oinus, not oinus, he's chayav no matter what, because he did it via dayim.
Even if they forced him.
If he only told them verbally, then that's when you make the distinction whether oinus or not. That's the halacha. There are other Rishonim who learn different other possibilities, such as, for example, that no matter what, oinus or not, you're always potter on saying, and the difference is oinus or not oinus. If it was oinus, even if nothing, you'd be potter. If it was not oinus, then even if you just said, you'd be chayev. several different approaches on it. In any case, here there was an onus. He only told them, he didn't actually pick it up and give it to them. Therefore, Rava is telling Rabbona bar Yehuda, you were wrong in saying he's chayev. In that case, he's potter, because there was onus, and because he only said it. So in the case of the Gazlan there before, by the way, the difference is, Tosfos says the difference is, they told him only show us your stuff, so he had no business showing them a field that he stole, which is not his. In this case, they're telling him generically, show us stuff that's available. So therefore, he can just as well, because there's an onus, then he can just as well be showing them somebody else's as his own.
How do you apply the taking in your hand to a field?
So then there's not. Doctor. I mean, I guess it would mean taking in the hand would mean, for example, bringing them in there and helping them put up the fence or whatever. I don't know. But yeah. There is also, they talk about what kind of onus are we talking about exactly. Is onus mammon enough to be potter? Does it have to be onus nefashis if they're threatening to kill him? Okay, that's a whole other.
Onus nefashis.
Onus nefashis would mean they're threatening to kill him.
Right.
Onus mammon would mean that it's just they're threatening to take away his own mammon.
But onus nefashis, he would be potter.
So then, if not of a nosim beyad, even if it was onus nefashis, I'm fairly certain the halacha is still be chayev. Because very nice, if it was onus nefashis, you were forced. The fact of the matter is, you had no business being matzal atzmo mammon chaver. You're fine. You want to show them, you want to just verbally show it to them, that's fine. But you're actually going to go and pick it up and give it to them, then already you became
his own life.
It's fine. You saved.
You lose wrong, so you're saying that the
No, you're not obligated to lose your own life. We had a case earlier in the Masechta, you know, we had the interesting story before involving David HaMelech, and then we had the case of the field of barley and the field of lentils,
right.
Where one explanation over there, and what do we have over there? One explanation in the Gemara was that he wanted to know, can you be matzalat umam and chaveri? Can we burn down these piles of barley that the plishtim that belong to Jews that the plishtim are hiding out in order to get rid of the plishtim? Are we allowed to do that? Matzalat umam and chaveri. And the Sanhedrin over there said you're also to do that. You're a king, so it's an exception for you. But David didn't want to use that hector. Also after means. So one way of looking at it, which I believe is halacha, is exactly that. It means that you're also to do it. Yes, you're using it to save your life, fine, b'kuach nefesh and all, very nice. The fact of the matter is, you picked up and took the other guy's thing and gave it to the moiser, or in that case, you actually took the torch and burnt down the thing. You're going to be chayav to pay afterwards.
But nobody says you're also to do it. They say that we pick up nefesh and then we're all Shabbos, right?
Because in this case, why are you picking up the thing to give to them? You have you could give them your own stuff. You don't have to give them somebody else's stuff. You can get out of the Kuch Nefesh situation. What?
If they just say, give me stuff.
So give them your own stuff. What are you taking somebody else's
stuff?
No,
if they say, I want yours, and I'll now show me someone else's.
That's the case. But fine, but so then give them yours. So give them yours. What are you doing giving them somebody else's?
If they say it's not enough, they're going to kill him if they don't have more than that. First do your own.
If then if your own is done, then fine. At that point, you're not matzal atzmo mammon chaver because you don't have any more mammon of your own. Fine. Omar Rabba, imhera me'atzmo, if he showed it to them on his own, voluntarily, k'nos of enos of miyad dummy, then that's the equivalent of actually giving it to them. Another case, Hamu Gavra Datsu Ovid Gachavim, there was a person who was forced by Goyim, but Achve, Achamra, did a Mori Grey, did a Pinchas Grey, did a Chista.
You see, the Atzmo, it implies that if it was not the Atzmo, you would probably be
better. Hera, if he was Hera by Atzmo, as opposed to Hera by Onus. Yes, if he Hera by Onus, then we said he's Potter. But Hera, if he only showed it to them, he only pointed them, take that, he didn't actually, but there was no Onus, then he's Chayim. That's what we're saying. So the halacha is among the four possible cases. No onus. So what? You have four cases. No onus hera. No onus nos of a nosan. Onus hera. Onus nos of a nosan. The halacha is that three out of those four cases you'll be chayav. Namely, if nos of a nosan, regardless whether it was onus or not, or if hera without onus. So that's what we're saying. Okay, so there was a case. There was a person who was forced by Goyim, but Achve, and he showed them Achamra, he showed them the wine, or maybe the donkey, Achamra can have both meanings, of Rav Mori, the son of Rav Pinchas, the son of Rav Chista. Omrule, and they told him, once he showed it to them already, Dori v'amti bahadon, pick it up and carry it with us. I guess that shows it must have been wine. If it was a donkey, he could have walked on its own. So pick it up and carry it with us. Dorav Amti Bahadai, sure enough, picked it up and carried it along with them to the king's palace. Also the Kamei Dirabashi, so he came afterwards to Rabashi for a Din Torah, Patrine, and Rabashi patered him from paying. Omru le Rabbanu le Rabashi, Valtaniyim Nasav and Nasav Yad Chayev, what happened to this picking up and giving his Chayev? Omru he tells them, Hani Mili Hechad le Oitme Ale Meikara. That's talking about where he didn't L'Hachila show it to them in the first place. Meaning, if he voluntarily, if he, before he even showed it to them, he picked it up and brought it to them, regardless whether it was onus or not, according to the rif, which is aloha, then he's going to be chayav. Because, in other words, he's the one who directly caused it to be lost.
Without it.
Even with onus. That's what he just said. If he picked it, before they even saw the thing, they told him, for example, we're looking for grain or wine or what have you. And it could be where they're telling him, you know, where they're just telling him, it could be where they're forcing him, whatever. He goes into a storehouse, let's say, he goes into somebody else's storehouse and comes out with a barrel of wine. That's nothing enough in the yard. That's what you're saying, he'd be chayav. Aval hecha to oitme alavei meikra, but where he stood them over it in the first place, meaning in other words, where they first saw it on their own, he showed it to them, but it was an oinus, and he said, oinus, where you're showing it to potter, once they already saw it, and we know they're going to take it, meikra mitla talia, it's as if it was already burnt. It's already a lost cause anyway. So then his nasav and nasav miyad, the fact that he picked up this barrel and brought it along with them, is not adding anything more to the heaven. If he hadn't picked it up, they already saw it. They already saw it because he showed them. But fine, he showed them because of onus, and he's potter on onus. That's somebody else we're talking about. But nevertheless, because L'Hachila there was an onus, and therefore he was entitled to, Heram Lom and Chavera, we said he's Potter. We said there was, because you have both factors, there's onus and it's only Hera, therefore he's Potter. Now the fact that they already saw it and they're going to be taking it anyway, and now they're telling him pick it up and schlep it with us, that doesn't add anything to the hezek that was already accomplished. And since he's potter on the original showing it to them because it was an onus, then he's potter on this also.
They wouldn't he would they would travel that lost that final one. Only why he lost it was this bad guy that's there.
But remember it was an onus. They were forcing him. Yisrael Shan Tzur over to Kachavim. If they want your own, fine. But if they're telling him, let's say, we want Pliny's stuff, for example.
Oh,
yeah. Okay.
Story.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
If you have a choice.
Yeah. Okay. Eisvei Rabbo Rabashi. So Rabbo asks, what do you mean? We learn in a braisa. Amalei anas hoshit kia omer zeh. If an anas, again one of these mafia guys, tells a yid, hand me this bundle of straw, or eshkalon of him there, or hand me this bunch of grapes, v'hoshit lo, and he hands it to him, chayim. L'chura zeh implies that the anas already saw it on his own. He's already ready to take it on his own. All he's asking the yid is to hand it to him, and we see the yid is chayim. Why? L'chura, according to what Rabashi said, mikla kalya, as soon as the guy saw it. It's a law. Yeah, it's a death. Yeah. The answer is Hachmaiskin going to koi betray every nahada. Yes, but we're talking about over here where they're standing on two sides of a river. So therefore, in other words, the guy can't reach the squaw or the grapes by himself. So now there's two different ways. There's two different ways that Beforshim learned this. One is that even though they're on two sides of the, again, depending on the different opinions that we said before about onas and yet nasim and nasim b'yad, if you say that he's chayev regardless of onus or not, it could mean that on the other side of the river, he may have been able to be ma'anasim. He may have, for example, still had him in the sights of his gun, or maybe not. Nevertheless, nasim and nasim b'yad, he's chayev, because the guy saw it, but he's not going to be able to get across to be able to get it. Therefore, it's not mikla kalya, it's not burnt to begin with, it's not destroyed to begin with as soon as the guy sees it, because he needs your cooperation in order to get it. If we say, like Rabbeinu Hanano, that you're potter on nasav and nasav b'yad, if it was ba'onus, then you have to say that he taka was ba'onus. Even though it's the other side of the river, the guy taka still had him in his sight, and you wouldn't be able to run away.
So basically, it amounts to saying that whether or not it's onus when it's standing on the other side.
No, again, according to the rif, it doesn't matter whether it was onus or not.
Right.
Either way, nasav and nasav b'yad, you're chayev. According to Rabbeinu Hanano, you're still only chayev if there was no onus. So you would have to understand there, that he didn't have him in his sight or whatever. So the yid goes and then gives it over. But if he had him in his gunfight, according to Rabbeinu Hanano, he would be faltered. Yeah. Okay. The Gemara says Dekanami. In fact, you can prove that from the wording of the Braisa. Dekatani Hoshit, because the Braisa says that the Goy says to the Hoshit, which means hand it over. Volaitani Tain, it doesn't say give it, which would mean like they're standing right next to each other. Shmamina, that proves that that's what we're talking about. So in that case, that's what we're saying, that the river separates them. So therefore, again, only if, so therefore, the Goy seeing it doesn't automatically mean that it's a goner. Only when the Yid hands it over is it then given over into the hands of the Goy, and therefore he's chayav. Mashenkin, if they had been on the same side of the river, as soon as the Goy saw it and decided he's going to take it, then it would be already a goner, and therefore the Yid picking it up and give it to him doesn't add anything extra.
He's got it in his friend's property again.
Yeah.
And then he has a choice to give his or someone else's.
I don't know, you could have his field here, whatever. No. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, if you can hand it over, the distance is so great. But if you can hand it over, the
going to. Not necessarily, because hand it over, you find in some places in the Gemara, for example, that like they would use farm tools, like they'd use a pitchfork or something to hand things across the river. So you could be talking about, imagine, for example, we mentioned before about the river is during this time is swollen. You know, you could imagine that the river is 50 feet wide and the current is strong and whatever, and the guy is not coming across so easily. But still, you know, he has the ability to shoot you from. Yeah.
Okay.
No, that's we're doing at 8:30. One has nothing to do with the other. Nah, they say it's only 45 minutes.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.